All right, if we could all open up our Bibles to 2 Chronicles chapter 29. 2 Chronicles 29. So we've been looking at some of the kings of Judah, the kings in the line of David, some of the sons of them. We're not looking at the kings of Israel up north, but the kings of David. You can read about them in the book of Matthew, Matthew chapter 1, where it talks about the genealogy of Jesus and all of those kings that are in his line. And we started at Rehoboam was the first one we started, the first king. Last week was Ahaz. Remember him? What a wicked, wicked king Ahaz was. I don't know if there was a worse one. Maybe next week. I was wishing we could end on a positive note. Next week we'll look at Manasseh. Did not just do well. And then after him was Josiah, the boy king who did. And I asked for one more week this morning. I don't know if that how well that went. But Ahaz, as we saw last week, was a very wicked king. And we saw some of the things that he did just in offering up his firstborn to the god Molech. And just, I can't do that. And if you could pray, my daughter Madeline, she's home with a slight fever today. And just, you know, Mrs. Naparella knows who she is, and just she's extra pitiful this morning. Just a little more somber, but but she's doing good. So I'm sure they're taking part in something Bambi related at this time.
Oh,
so,
definitely.
So let's see. So as we saw last week, Ahaz had a good father. Remember his father? He had Jotham was his father, and then Uzziah before him. So sometimes we can have a good father, a father that follows after the Lord, and even a grandfather, almost like a third-generation Christian, but then to turn away. As we saw last week, Ahaz just turned away and did whatever he wanted to do. So really, everybody has their own choice. Everybody. It's your choice whether you're going to serve God or you're going to follow him or you're just going to turn your back on him and not have anything to do with him. Really, Ahaz did everything, undid all the right things that his father Jotham and his grandfather Uzziah had done. Undid all of it. And when we see, as we saw in the end of chapter 28, what's going on in Jerusalem, there's pretty much a false altar, or worshiping of false gods on like every street corner. Every street corner in every city, they're worshiping false gods. Judah is just a mess. A mess. So, as Mr. Naparel pointed out, I don't have a video up today, but next week I'm hoping to have a little bit shorter lesson so I can address Mrs. Hartman's question next week about the Philistines. And so just to go over that, I want to give a little bit of detail about that because we see the Philistines everywhere in the Old Testament. And just to have a little description on it, I'm hoping it'll be helpful. I've been trying not to give you too much information, but just the right amount to explain it. So that's my challenge. So, next week. So, today, we're looking at Hezekiah. He is a very important king, we see him in 2 Kings chapters. He's in chapters 18, 19, and 20, and 2 Chronicles chapters 29, 30, 31, 32, Isaiah 36, 37, 38, 39. I mean, so many of these that we have looked at in the past, there's been like maybe one chapter in 2 Chronicles, maybe one chapter in 2 Kings, but Hezekiah, there's a lot said about him. Even in some of the other books, Proverbs chapter 25, there's some sayings that the men of Hezekiah copied out, and he's all throughout our Bible, in Micah, in Isaiah, in Chronicles, in Kings. There's a lot said about Hezekiah, but we're not going to have time to cover all of that. 10-plus chapters, at least 5 books talk about him. So I hope you brought your lunch, hope you brought a pillow or something, so because we're gonna get into it this morning. No, I'm just kidding. We'll just take a high level look, just at some of the examples in his life. Just some of the themes in his life. So how can I emulate some of the things that he did right in his life? Because that's what we're doing. We're looking at some leaders and some good examples that they were, and then as last week, some of the bad examples. Hey, don't do that. Stay away from that. So, 2 Chronicles chapter 29 and verse number 1. Hezekiah began to reign when he was 5 and 20 years old, and he reigned 9 and 20 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Abijah, the daughter of Zechariah. So how old is he when he starts to reign? 25 years. And he reigns for 29 years. So he's 54 when he dies. Now, I paid a little bit of attention. I meant to make a few notes on this last week. And when we closed last week with Ahaz, remember how, anybody catch how old Ahaz was when he died? I think he was 36 years old when he died, okay? So 36 when Ahaz died. Now, his son, Hezekiah, is 25 when he takes over. Okay, so just do some subtraction there. So 11. Was Hezekiah born when Ahaz was 11? I've been in the back of my mind kind of paying attention to that going forward. That all the other ones seemed about right, you know, about 20. This one stood out to me. But as we saw in some of the wickedness of Ahaz last week, okay, I can kind of, but that's some 11-year-old, okay? So, but moving on with that. So, verse number 2, the summary verse in chapter 29. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David, his father, had done. So here's a king who did right in everything that he did. After last week, really, that's such a refreshing thing to have a king who did right in all that he did. But hold your place here. Let's go over to 2 Kings chapter 18. 2 Kings 18, we'll be back to 2 Chronicles. This is kind of the sister story. It brings, really, I'd encourage you to read through these three passages. Read through 2 Kings, read through 2 Chronicles, read through Isaiah, and get a full encompassing picture of what's going on with Hezekiah. Because we're going to draw from kind of all three of those this morning. We'll read some scripture in the beginning here, and then I'll just try to go into explanation. So, in 2 Kings chapter 18 and verse number 4, let's read this one. Let me read verse number 3. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father did. Let's look at what he did that was right. He removed the high places and break the images and cut down the groves and break in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it. And he called it Nehushtan. Remember that brazen serpent from Moses' days where they were out there and they were being bitten and that by the serpents and that plague came through? And what did they have to do? They just had to look at that brazen serpent. And they were healed from that plague that came through. Kind of where the song comes from, you know, look and live, look and live. So, but what were the children of Israel, children of Judah doing with that brazen serpent? They were worshiping it. They were offering incense to it. They were sacrificing to it. Jesus actually referenced that brazen serpent in John chapter 3. But they were worshiping something, something that was supposed to point to God. But they were worshiping that serpent instead of worshiping God. That serpent just pointed to God. But they're worshiping that thing. And that's something that sometimes we can do. We can worship the thing instead of worshiping the God of. You can worship the Bible without worshiping the God of the Bible. You can worship prayer without worshiping who you're praying to. I know so many people, and they're all about the book, okay? But they're all about that, but you know, what does the book say? What is God trying to teach you and tell you? And they don't want to talk at all about that. It's just the book, you know? So I'm all about, you know, the King James Bible, the 1611. That's God's perfect translation that he's given to us. But what's he trying to say to us? What's he trying to say to us? And let's read it, and let's take that. Let's not just worship the book. Let's worship God. It's all about him. But this is how he communicates to us. One of the ways how he communicates to us. So they were losing their focus there. The focus always needs to be God and God alone. Really, that's what it needs to be. So let's read verse number 5 here in chapter 18. He trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah. That's quite the statement. After him was none like him of all the kings of Judah. So here's Hezekiah. So everybody who comes after him, nobody was as good of a king as Hezekiah was. Boy, and if you could, somebody could say that about you. Hey, everybody in your family who came after you, you were the best example of that. But look at the rest of the verse. Nor any that were before him. Wow. You think about some of the kings that had come before him. But Hezekiah was the best example of all of the sons of David. So you take David and Jesus as kind of, let's say, the bookends. And who of all those kings in there, who's the best example? Hezekiah. Hezekiah is, according to that verse right there. Boy, I should take heed to Hezekiah's life. Hey, what are some things that he did? What a great shining example. So let's learn some things about him this morning. Let's look at verse number 6. For he clave to the Lord. There's a good word, a clave, a good five-letter word. Anybody play Wordle? So, if you've played Wordle, here, you step it up. Play Quirtle. Quirtle. You do four at the same time. That's tough. It's a five-letter. Ask me later. It's a lot of fun. It gets the brain going in the morning. So anyways, in case you need, unless you need coffee or caffeine, it's some kind of stimulant like that. So just, you know. So anyways, I'll get too many coffee lovers in here. I'll get stoned. For he clave to the Lord and departed not from following him, but kept his commandments, which the Lord commanded Moses. He clave unto the Lord. Verse number 7. And the Lord was with him, and he prospered whithersoever he went forth. And he rebelled against the king of Assyria and served him not. He smote the Philistines, even unto Gaza, and the borders thereof, from the tower of the watchmen to the fenced cities. Hezekiah did some great things. He served the Lord. He followed him. He was a shining example in many things that he did. So this morning, we're going to cover really three stages of Hezekiah's life. We're going to look at the early stage, early when he begins at age 25, when he begins in his reign. What habits does he form, you know, in his life, in his early life? I think about, there's no Claire, there's no Chester. Oh, the young people are supposed to be here. Think about what in your early life, when you start off. Roger, you are a young person, so we're in rough shape, right? 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 No, Roger? Ray's like, no, not oh. You wish. So think about some of the early things that you formed, the early habits in your childhood, just from going through high school, you know. And I think about my high school class. I don't have a connection to really one of them. Ryan's the only one. But, I occasionally come across them, and I see them. And the kids who were doing right, the kids who were following after God when we were in high school, those are kind of the kids that are following after God today. And the kids during school who weren't really are not. That's not to say that, you know, God doesn't take, people don't turn their lives around. People who are doing wrong, their life gets turned around and they start following him. Thank the Lord for that, for when we see that. But the vast majority, the normal case is the people who have good standards and they keep good habits in their life of following after God, that continues. So that was something that happened in Hezekiah's life. So we'll look at his early life. We'll look at the middle of his reign, where we see two huge events, two big things happen in his life, and how he deals with them. We'll learn. You learn a lot about somebody when they go through some very difficult situations. You see the real them. You see who they really are and how they deal with that. And then the end of his life. There's two lessons at the end of his life, and I think about. When we come to an end, will I finish strong? Will I finish strong, or will I be like one? Many of these kings that we've seen do right for a long period of time, and then just kind of at the end, they just kind of throw in the towel. They don't finish strong, and we see some problems with Hezekiah toward the end of his life. So, the early stage, the first part of his life. Let's turn back to 2 Chronicles chapter 29. I'll refer to a few things here and there. Try to bring out some important things here. So, so the first thing in his early ministry, in his early life, he dealt with the mess first. He dealt with the mess first. Hezekiah inherited a huge mess. You think about, we talked about Ahaz, and there's a false temple. They're worshiping a false god pretty much at every street corner. Remember the temple door? The temple doors were nailed shut. Nailed shut. There's no worship going on. The temple is being, it's a storehouse for junk. It's filled with junk. You know, Mrs. Huber is here. I was thinking about you this week as I was going through this. I couldn't imagine, you know, she likes this place nice and clean, nice and neat and clean. Could you imagine? Oh, I have a question. Yes.
I'm sorry, I wasn't here last week. Ahab or Ahaz?
Ahaz. A-H-A-Z. He was one of the kings. Ahab was one of the kings of Israel. He has long since perished, but Ahaz. So two different people. Yes, some of the names are very similar. But yes, Ahaz with a Z. Yes. Good question. So the storehouse was filled with junk. the temple was filled with, it was a storehouse for junk. And then when he came in, that's what he inherited. You know, oftentimes God wants us to deal with the mess in our lives. Sometimes maybe you got saved out of sin and like, look at this mess I have to clean up. Or maybe you see somebody who they get saved and you're like, ooh, they got some mess to clean up. And pray for them. Pray for them. You know, they don't have everything in order yet. It's a work in progress. You know, right? God isn't finished with me yet. We've still got a lot of things to do. 2 Chronicles 29, Matt, this morning. 2 Chronicles 29 we're in. So for 8 days... He gathers the priests, he gathers the Levites together, and he wants them to clean out the temple. This is pretty much in the, let's see, yes, verse 17 of chapter 29. Now they began on the first day of the month to sanctify, and on the eighth day of the month came they to the porch of the Lord. So they sanctified the house of the Lord in 8 days, and in the 16th day of the first month they made an end. So he gets the priests together, he gets the Levites together, and for eight days, they're carrying all this junk that's in the temple, and they're taking it and they're throwing it in the brook, Kidron. Can you imagine for 8 days having to carry stuff out? Anybody ever been a part of people move, right? We've all moved, sometimes many times, you know? And you know, you get that phone call, hey, can you help me move? And it's always like, oh, yeah, sure, I'd love to help you move. You know, who loves, you know, I like helping people move who have everything in boxes, everything's labeled. I had a friend at work, he had every box with a number on it, and his mother sat at the door, and when everybody came in, she looked at the box number and told them what room to take that box to. He was organized, this guy, you know. But, you know, occasionally, I think I've helped so many people move, but now I got a good excuse. Like, oh, my back, I'll try not to play that card too much, especially after I went sledding yesterday. I was a little nervous on that, but yeah, thankfully that went well, no problem. So that was good. It was a good time. Haven't been to Northampton in a long time, and that was fun. Anyways, but you know, sometimes you show up to help somebody move, and you know, the fridge is still full of food, the bed is still unmade, clothes are still hanging up in the closet. I heard about this one guy was helping a friend move. And they picked up the dresser, and he's like, boy, is there a bowling ball? Feels like there's a bowling ball in this dresser. He's like, there is. He said, there were three of them. Three of them. I'm like, are you kidding me? But, you know, I think they were college students kind of at the time, so you know how they are. You're like, oh, yeah. And yesterday we were at sledding, and like this big group of SUNY students showed up. It was like 20 of them or more. They showed up with, have these people ever been sledding? They showed up with like baking pans. And garbage bags to go over the baking pan. I'm like, are you? And the lids of totes. I think they're all failing. You know, they're not in physics, whatever they are. I'm telling you that because they had. We gotta reel it back in here. There was all kinds of junk. This is in the first month. Hey, Hezekiah wanted to celebrate the Passover. He wanted to celebrate. He wanted to get the temple all cleaned out. Hey, we got 8 days to do it. Let's go. Let's hurry up. We want to get this done. Well, it actually took them 16 days to do it. They didn't get it done in time. They're just throwing all this junk out. There was way too much going on, way too much in there. So the first thing he did was he dealt with the mess. The second thing is he emphasized the heart most. And it's so important. And if you just read through these passages, you'll see how many times God refers to Hezekiah's heart, his heart. Because God is so much more concerned about the why you do what you do than what you do. Is why are you doing that? Because actually, through this passage, Hezekiah breaks the law three different times. Hezekiah breaks the law. But God still blesses him because his heart is in the right way. The first thing that he does that's kind of against the law is they celebrate the Passover 1 month late. It was supposed to be in the first month, and that's what he's doing here, or, you know, about midway through chapter 29. He's trying to get the temple all cleaned up so they can celebrate the Passover. But when do they celebrate the Passover? Look in chapter 30 and verse number 15. It says, then they killed the Passover on the 14th day of the second month. Hey, he says, hey, I don't want to wait another year to be able to celebrate the Passover. Let's just do it next month. That had never been done before. It's always the 14th day of the first month, which is about our April-ish time in the spring. But hey, let's do it next month. Let's do it on the 14th day of the next month. And you know what? God blessed him. God blessed him for doing that because his heart was right. It was in the right way. And the other thing that, another way that he broke the law, was he used the Levites to offer the sacrifices. Back to chapter 29, when they actually finally do clean up the temple and they get everything right and they sanctify the temple, then they offer a bunch of different sacrifices. But look at verse number 34 in chapter 29. Chapter 29, verse 34. But the priests were too few, so that they could not flay all the burnt offerings. Wherefore their brethren, the Levites, did help them till the work was ended and until the other priests had sanctified themselves. For the Levites were more upright in heart to sanctify themselves than the priests. So when Hezekiah started off, he calls all the Levites together, he calls all the priests together, because really nothing had been going on. The temple doors were nailed shut. There's no worship of God going on. He calls them back, and the Levites come and report, yes, sir, what do you want us to do? Where the priests were more slow to come back. They weren't, not as many of them came back. They weren't as involved as the Levites were. So here when they're doing the sacrifices, you know, the Levites were more of the servants when it comes to the temple. They were more of the ones who did the dirty work. You think about all the sacrifices that came in, and they cleaned things up, they took care of the carcasses, they took them away. They did a lot of things to enable the priests in their service. The priests were the ones more up in front of the people, a bit more of a glamorous job, also more of a dangerous job. You know, when they go into the temple, and if they're not pure, they die. So both of them are very important, but the Levites are more servants. Yes?
The Levites were the priests.
All the priests are of the tribe of Levi?
Yeah.
Yes, but these are ones that are, they're also of the tribe of Levi, but they're not priests, but they're just helping the priests.
Oh.
All of them are of the tribe of Levi. Yes, good question. Thank you. So, not as many of the priests report, so the Levites, like, hey, they're not supposed to be doing this. They're not supposed to be, you know, helping the priests with the sacrifice. In this way, in verse 34, but they, you know, hey, can you do this? Can you help us with this? And they step up, the Levites step up, and they help the priests with their job. God will use availability more than your talent and ability. Boy, the priests weren't there, but the Levites were there. Hey, you're available to help? Hey, and God used them because they were available and willing to help. Also makes me think of one of the judges. You know, when you ask the Sunday school kids, the judges, and if there's girls in the class, who do they want to name? Deborah. Deborah was one of the judges. Hey, there's a time in history where God was looking for a man to lead, and there wasn't one found. So he used an available woman to help lead the children of Israel out of the bondage and captivity that they were in at the time. God isn't so impressed on your ability as your availability. Hey, maybe other people could do it, but they weren't there, they weren't willing, they weren't available to do it, but the Levites were. The heart is more important than talent. The heart is way more important than talent. So they celebrated the Passover a month late, the Levites were used to offer sacrifices, and they allowed unsanctified people into the temple. So at this time, when Hezekiah wanted to do this Passover, he sent a letter up north to Israel. Now, up north, what had happened, the king of Assyria had come in and wiped out the 10 northern tribes. There is not a king ruling there anymore on the throne in Samaria. That's done, and they're just obliterated. But there's still some people hanging around up there. And Hezekiah sends up a letter and says, hey, We're going to do this down in Jerusalem. I want you to invite you to come if you'd like to come. And how was his letter received? Not very well. Not very well. How often is an invitation to church received well? When you invite a friend, you invite a coworker, you knock on somebody's door. How often do you get, "Oh yeah, what time is it? Yep, I'll be right there." Tomorrow, 10 o'clock? Sure, I'll be there. How often do we get that? Not very often. But don't let that dishearten you. It's still very important that we do that. So some of these people came down, and they came to the city. But the problem was is they weren't sanctified. They weren't sanctified to enter into the temple. And Hezekiah do? He stood by the door, and he said, "Hey, come on in. Don't worry about it. Just come on in." And what did he do? He prayed for them as they were coming in. Look at chapter 30 again. Chapter 30 and verse 17. "For there were many in the congregation that were not sanctified. Therefore, the Levites had the charge of the killing of the Passover for every one that was not clean to sanctify them unto the Lord." And then in the end of let's read 18. "For a multitude of the people, even many of Ephraim and Manasseh, Issachar and Zebulun, that had not cleansed themselves, yet did they eat the Passover, otherwise than it was written. But Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, The good Lord pardon every one that prepareth his heart to seek God, the Lord God of his fathers, though he be not cleansed according to the purification of the sanctuary." So he's praying for them as they're coming in. He's like, "Hey, it's all right, come on in." And he's praying, "Lord, forgive them. Lord, pardon them. Lord, see their heart, that they just want to serve you and they want to glorify you with their lives." That's so important because God sees our heart. You know, we see the outward appearance on people, but God sees right down in and sees what our intentions are, and that's so important. So just some lessons from the early life. He dealt with the mess first. He emphasized the heart most, and he influenced others for God. Hezekiah influenced others for God. People who have a heart for God always have a heart for people. And you'll see that. People who love God just have a love for people. 1 John 4, 20 and 21. "If a man say, I love God and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he has seen, how can he love God, whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also." Hey, if you love God, you're going to love other people. Hezekiah just loved people and wanted them to love God. We just see this, how he reached out to the people up north, and they're a mess. They don't have a leader. They've been destroyed. "Hey, come on down. Come on down and worship with us. Celebrate the Passover with us in Jerusalem." Remember what the Passover was? It was a time of reflection, really, on what God had done for them in Egypt, how he had brought them out of that terrible bondage that they had been in for so many years. So he dealt with the mess first, he emphasized the heart most, and he influenced others for God. So that's kind of the early stage of his life, what he did there. So now the middle portion of his life. So this is about halfway through. He had reigned reigned a total of 29 years, so this is about 14 years into his reign. He started reigning about 715 B.C., so this is at about 701 B.C., when some bad things happen to good people. And sometimes that happens. Bad things happen to good people. So what's the bad thing that happens? Hey, the Assyrians come back. They come back, and they have a new leader this time. His name is Sennacherib, okay? And they're the new world power, okay? They took over Israel sometime in the past, about 722 BC, and now we're at 701. And so now they're on their way down to Egypt to take on Egypt, because Egypt, the Egyptians are the other big boy on the block, and they want to take them out. So they're stopping at all these places on the way down, and they stop at Judah. And they've destroyed, I think it's like 40, 45, 47 cities on the way, these walled cities that they're just, you know, laying siege to and destroying them. And all the people are held up in Jerusalem. They see what's coming, they see what's going on, and they're held up in Jerusalem just waiting to see what happens. And Sennacherib is actually at Lachish at the time, but he sends which is a city not too far away. He sends a delegation over to Jerusalem with these couple messengers, and they read this letter to Hezekiah. Hezekiah sends three of his men out just outside the city, and these three men from the delegation of Sennacherib, they're speaking to Hezekiah's men in Hebrew. They're speaking to them. And they're saying things, you know, like, hey, don't try to hide here. You're not going to be delivered. Hezekiah can't take care of you. And the three men of Hezekiah say, hey, can you talk to us in Aramaic? Because we speak Aramaic, but they're speaking Hebrew. And why are they speaking Hebrew? So all the soldiers on the wall can hear exactly what they're saying and that their hearts can be broken inside of them. Oh, we're in Jerusalem, but that army that's out there, that is a world power right now. There is no way we could achieve the power that they have. There is no way that we can do this. And their hearts would just be broken and when they see and hear what's coming their way. So, but what do the men on the wall do? What do the soldiers on the wall do? Nothing. They don't say anything because that's what Hezekiah had commanded them. Don't say anything. Don't say anything. So the three men come in to Hezekiah and report to him what's going on. And what does Hezekiah do? He calls Isaiah. He says, Isaiah, what should I do? What should I do? And what does Isaiah say? Hey, don't worry about it. God's got it under control. Don't worry about it. He doesn't give him any detail. He doesn't say how God's going to deliver him. He just says, don't worry about it. God's got it. It's under control. Don't worry about it. That's hard. That's easy to say. That's hard to do. Especially, I was thinking about this, and I'm thinking about this week. This week, what's going on in our world this week. We have one of the largest standing armies. I don't know if Russia's number two or whatnot. I think I read like 900,000 is their current standing army. And I read about how many soldiers that they're sending into Ukraine. Not that many. I mean, at one point, they're the first night and the second night, there's like 900 that they were sending in. But if they really wanted, if we really, let's say 300,000 come in and, but even still, the city, I don't even know how to say it. It's like, you all know, we've all been following along a little bit. The capital city of Ukraine that they're surrounding and they're penetrating now. And imagine if God made this promise to them, hey, don't worry about it. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Hey, it's okay. Like, are you kidding me? We see what's going on. We see the smoke. People that we know died yesterday or this morning. We see the footage. And just to say, it's okay, don't worry about it. That's easy to say and really hard to do. Really hard to do. I was thinking, boy, if God... I'd love to see God deliver Ukraine like he did Jerusalem here. Wow, what would that do? That would be something to see. But then part of me says, well, if he's done that, and we'll see that in a minute, what he did. But still, what happens with the children of Israel, the children of Judah, and how quickly they fall away? Even if God was to deliver Ukraine, boom, all of the Russians die. Done. Invading forces, done. But let me just say, I don't believe all the Russians are on board with what's going on. Okay, if you have a Russian friend, reach out to them and say, hey, just because what's going on, I always say I have a Russian friend at work. Well, he's not. He's actually Moldovan. He kind of fessed up to that. I think now it's kind of easier. He would just say that because he said, nobody knows who Moldova is. Well, if you come to Walker Bible Baptist Church, you know about Moldova. Okay, we just had a great missionary preach about that. So reach out to them, and just they're not all one. Okay, it's not like, I can't. I mean, we're not out of time. So, all these funny things that come to mind. Isaiah tells Hezekiah, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. So then Sennacherib gets some news from back home. Hey, the Ethiopians have invaded. You got to go. We need you back here. We got problems. So Sennacherib sends one more letter, one more even stronger letter to Hezekiah. Hey, I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to destroy you. And what does Hezekiah do? He takes the letter and he goes into the temple and he lays it out. He lays it out before the Lord and he says, God, what am I going to do? God, I need your help. I need your help with this. I don't know what to do. God, I need your help. And what happens? Well, let me just say, what's on your letter? What's on your letter that you, this horrible thing that's come into your life, you don't know what to do with? You know, is it a wayward child? Is it an unsaved spouse? Is it a bad health report? Lord, I can't do anything about this. I need your help with this. What do I do? What do I do? And about that time, that's when Isaiah comes in and says, hey, Hezekiah, don't worry. I'm going to take care of this. It's all going to be fine. Not one arrow is going to enter into the city. Not one arrow. Imagine if God made that promise to the, I'm just thinking, again, recent events, the Ukraine. Hey, not one missile, not one, that's it, no more. But that happened. God did that with this country and protected Jerusalem against the Assyrians. Not one. So Hezekiah says, okay, and he goes to bed that night. What happens that night? That night, an angel of the Lord comes in and destroys 185,000 men of the army of Assyria. 185,000 of their most mighty men. That's in 2 Kings. It mentions it here in 2 Chronicles. But 185,000 men don't wake up the next morning. Man. Can you imagine that? I always thought it was like some battle or that happened that night. They didn't do too well at fighting at night then. I don't know if he just came in and almost like the firstborn in Egypt, like that plague that came through, and they just didn't wake up. Maybe you know somebody like that. You wake up in the morning, you're like, hey, wake up. You know, are you still there? Hey, you know, these people sleep so hard. But these guys didn't wake up. They were done, 185,000. Then what happened? They got up and they went home. They went home and not one arrow entered into Jerusalem. God had delivered Jerusalem from Sennacherib and the Assyrian. And what happened when Sennacherib got home? In his palace, two of his trusted men kill him, assassinate him in his own temple, or his own palace. So bad things reveal the truth about good people. Bad things reveal the truth about what is true about good people. What do we see here? Hezekiah in his heart. He just said, Lord, I need your help. I don't know what to do with this. Lord, please help me through this. And bad things give strength to good people. Bad things give strength to good people. When bad things come into your life, those trials that come into your life, you know, when you are able to conquer that trial, God is preparing you for the next trial. You're like, oh, God, you just gave me that one? What's next? If I just had to deal with that, I don't want to see what's next, you know. But he's preparing you for what's next in your life. So what comes next? I mentioned there's two big things that come in the middle of Hezekiah's life. The first one was the Assyrians coming to him and besieging Israel. Well, almost. They were threatening to destroy him. The second thing was he's not feeling well. Let's see. And he's lying sick on his bed, and he's not eating, and he's going to die. Hezekiah is going to die. He gets Isaiah the prophet comes to him. Isaiah may have been a good doctor, but he didn't have good bedside manner at all. What does Isaiah say to Hezekiah? You're going to die and not live. You know, just in case there's any doubt that you're not going to make it through this at all. So what does Isaiah do? He turns his head to the wall and he starts crying. And he says, Lord, I want to live. Lord, I want to live. Will you please let me live? He's 39 years old at this time. He started reigning when he was 25. He's about 14 years in. 39, 40 years old. Hey, you're going to die. So he cries out to God, and God hears his prayer. And then he taps Isaiah on the shoulder and says, hey, go back to Hezekiah. Go tell him he has some more time. He's like, what? I just told him he's going to die. I know. And so he heads back, and he says, hey, King Hezekiah, I got something to tell you. You're never going to believe this. Oh, yeah, I think I might. And he says, hey, I'm going to give you some more time. And to prove it to you, I'm going to move the sun. I'm going to move the sundial. You know, do you want me to move it forward, or do you want me to move it backward? So, and Hezekiah, what does he say? Hey, can you move it back 10 degrees? 10 degrees. Now, if you take, you know, the globe and all the different time zones, I think there's like 24 of them. So each one of them represent an hour, and each one of them is 15 degrees. So 10 degrees would be 40 minutes. 40 minutes. So the sun went back about 40 minutes of time. You could I'm sure you could see it on the sundial. It goes backwards. Imagine that. 40 minutes of your life, you just got back. Like, man, but what 40 minutes of my life would I want back? No, I'd want like a minute, 1 minute sections over. I need 40 of them. Can I have 1 minute? All these decisions that I made, can you give me 1 minute back in 2003 and 1 minute here in 2000 or 19? No, we'll keep them in the 2000s. Right, we're still young here, right? So, but man, 40 minutes just to prove it to you. Seems like God. Last week we saw also God wanting to prove something, a sign to the kings. So he gives them, what does he give Hezekiah? 15 more years. 15 more years to live. So, and now let's look at his closing years. His closing years. So in the later portion of his life, a delegation comes from Babylon, and they come to visit Hezekiah in Jerusalem. And what is? And they're like, wow, we heard what you did, several years ago, how you defeated the Assyrians. You were just held up here in Jerusalem. They're huge and powerful out there. How did you do it? How did you defeat them? And so he's like, oh, well, come on in. Let me show you. He shows them everything in his house. Hey, here's all our armor. Here's our swords. Here's our shields. Here's our longbows. Here's our crossbows. Look at this. Here's the gold and the silver. And he shows them everything in his house. Shows them all these things that they have and how they conquered and how they won. What doesn't he do? Who doesn't he show? He doesn't show them God. It wasn't anything that we did. God delivered them, right? There was no battle that took place. There was not one arrow that was launched. God took care of the whole thing. But Hezekiah doesn't talk at all about God. He just shows them all the things that he has. So after they leave, Isaiah comes in and says, hey, what was that all about? What were they doing here? He's like, oh, that was just the delegation from Babylon, and I showed them everything that we did and everything that we have. And Isaiah says, you've contributed to the destruction of Jerusalem. You will live, but your grandchildren will be destroyed. And what does Hezekiah do? He rejoices. He rejoices and says, oh, yes, I'm okay. I'm okay. His grandchildren, by the time his grandchildren are reigning, then Nebuchadnezzar is knocking on the door, ready to destroy Jerusalem. But Hezekiah is okay. I made a mistake, but I'm going to be okay. I'm not going to get the punishment from that. Peace and prosperity can make me self-sufficient. Peace and prosperity can make me self-sufficient. He had done so many things well, and peace and prosperity had come into his life, and he started to feel like, hey, I'm self-sufficient. I did all this. And that's what he showed the delegation from Assyria. And Hezekiah rejoices. Hey, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. What else does peace and prosperity do? Peace and prosperity can make me self-satisfying. Self-satisfying. He's no longer looking for the future of his children. Hey, my children, my grandchildren, they're going to be destroyed. What did he want? He wanted a prolonged life. He wanted to live longer. What for? What for? We're missing some of the younger people. For the most part, we have a bit of a more experienced crowd here this morning. I mean, maybe that's where you are. Hey, I want to live longer. I want to take care of myself. Hey, I want to get my cardiovascular in. I'm going to take my Geritol. Is that still something? Geritol? I got my Metamucil. I got my multivitamins. I'm trying to, do things right. And take care of yourself. I'll be the first one to encourage you. Take care of yourself. Eat right, exercise, do your best. But why? Why? Why do you want to hang out? Why do you want to be here longer? Is it for you? Is it for you? Self-satisfying? Hey, I want to say that I lived here, and I want to do this, and I want to do that. Hey, let me encourage you. Let me encourage everybody here to pray for our nation. Pray for our nation, the world that we live in now. We don't know what's going to happen by noon. Noon, we don't know what's going to happen. 11 o'clock is in question. We don't know. You don't know what's going on. Nobody knows what's going on. Pray for our nation. Pray for, maybe you don't have kids in here right now today, but you have influence on some of them. You know what you can do? You can pray for them. Please pray for our children that are up that way. Pray for our children. Pray for all of them. All of our kids, they need prayers. There's been times in my life where a sin was right there, and I had no desire of it. And I'm so thankful. If it wasn't for the prayer of God's people in my life, it would have been so easy to take part in something, but nope, not going to do it. Not even consider it. I believe that's the prayer. People praying for me helped me. So please, pray for others. Sin is so available for our young people. It is right there in their face, right in their hand, wherever it is, right there. Please pray for our young people. Not just, hey, I want to live longer. Spend time. Please dedicate your life in praying for our country. Pray for our church. Pray for our young people. Pray for our church family, because we need prayer. It's a mess, and it's only getting worse out there. We still have an obligation to make a difference you'll never see. You know, maybe you're traveling down the road of life, and there's more of your life in the rearview mirror than in front of you. Like, hey, I'm not going to live as long as I have lived. So please, just because you're not going to be here and see some things, that's not an excuse to not praying and trying to help those in the future. Please do that. Don't just want more for you. Want more for the life of others. For the life of others. There's such a responsibility. There's such a, I just think about Pastor Seatman. You know, I grew up with him here. One of my dear friends. Him and I could tell you stories, especially if Rick is also there. He remembers everything, that guy. But just, you know, the Bryans were here on Wednesday night. And they served together with them in Mexico. And it was wonderful to see just the joy. It was a complete surprise. And here's a young man who grew up here and has done right, served the Lord in another nation. He is such an encouragement to me. And we need more people like that. Please pray for them. We don't need people jumping off ship and going off into the world. We need people to do right. Please pray for them. Don't just spend your time trying to improve yourself. Pray for others. We need that. Hezekiah stopped, lived for himself. A life of peace and prosperity. That's all he wanted for himself. But let's look for others and the life of others, and especially the young people around us. All right. So next week we'll look at Manasseh. He reigned for a long, long time. And unfortunately, he didn't do right for a good portion of his life. But at the end, he did. He got it kind of turned around. Yeah, that's why I was asking if I could do one more week and kind of fit in with Josiah, the boy king. We started reigning at 8 years old, and he was kind of finished on more of a positive note. Even though Manasseh was bad, and at the end he became good, but I don't think we're going to get that. So I'll try to next week be prepared to answer about the Philistines. So, all right, well, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for today. Lord, thank you for bringing everybody in. Lord, thank you for just the great example you gave us here of Hezekiah and so many things that he did right in the early part of his life, just having a heart to follow after you. Lord, I pray that each one of us would have a heart that seeks you and tries to do our absolute best for you. Lord, help us to also look out for those around us. Lord, help us to be in prayer for our country, for our church, for our children. I pray that you'd bless in that way. Lord, there's only so many things we can do, but Lord, you see the heart. Lord, help us to be faithful in watching out for them and doing our best to be a good example for our young people. Thank you for all you've done, Lord. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.